Hey, everybody, it's Scott. Welcome back to Science versus Fiction bonus episode. Stephen and I have somehow taken to doing commentaries for pilot episodes of popular science fiction shows. And while we were going to do The Expanse, and we are going to still do it very soon in the near future, Stephen, why don't you tell our listeners what we chose this time?
In the honor of Disney Plus launching this week, we decided to tackle a series about the gentleman who invented the car that they use as a time machine in Back to the Future.
You stole my bad Twitter joke.
Oh, did you tweet that?
Yeah, the other day I tweeted, oh, the Disney has a documentary called The Man
DeLorean.
Yeah, there we go, everybody. There was a car designer named John DeLorean, and he was also arrested for cocaine trafficking. And anyway, we are paused on the Lucasfilm Limited logo. So in the time it takes me to say stop, we want you to turn on your television or device and log into Disney Plus. And when you're at the Lucasfilm logo, pause it and unpause it when I say go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Lucasfilm.
Okay. Lucasfilm logo, just a little shimmy. All right. Now, Stephen, well, first off, this is an interesting little logo here.
Yeah.
It indicates kind of like a Star Wars universe kind of a logo.
Star Wars. Okay.
I like it, except the R makes it look like one word, and I hate that. I always correct people when they say Blade Runner is two words, and I don't know why. It's just a weird thing I have. Yeah. Now, as our listeners almost
definitely... Is this a flash forward? No, this is him...
As our listeners probably know, I just want to set the table for the show. This takes place somewhere let's say a year or so after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So that's where it takes
the Empire.
Right. It's well after the prequels. It's somewhat directly after the original trilogy and well before the 7, 8, 9 that we are enjoying in this stage.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the comfort zone for. You think this intentionally looks like the cantina? It's not obviously the same same planet, but
it is kind of
evocative of the.
I mean, everything in this entire episode is evocative of something else in Star Wars.
But I mean, is that fair to say? We're going to have this a lot because I mean, Star Trek came, and then the movies, and then the movies would kind of trade on the character beats and the the iconography and the catchphrases. And is that cheesy or is that part of doing a broad franchise?
I think that the Star Trek movies were vastly different from the TV series in most ways. I think that they updated a lot of the.
Right. But I'm just talking about like visual callbacks and
all that kind of stuff.
I'm talking mainly about, yeah.
Like, fatal to my enjoyment of the thing, but there's certainly a lot of, I hate the term fan service, but there's definitely quite a bit of, hey, remember this
thing? Well, I don't know. I mean, it is a thing, fan service, but on the other hand,
All right, so wait, hold on. Point of science.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine that they wouldn't have
some kind of safety
device.
Yeah, there's no possible way. I thought like maybe if he pulled him through
but
while he was
again,
stuck or something.
People do get caught in elevators and killed. And he did blast the controls of the thing, so maybe that the safety thing was in there.
I think the makeup on this fish guy is pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, and the makeup is cool. One of the things that always bugs me about anytime they do blue or green makeup on people, and this is true almost across the board in science fiction, is that their mouths and gums are still pink. And it's like if you had like blue blood coursing through your veins that made your skin look blue, your gums would look blue as well and your tongue. And they never are. Never.
I already off the bat, I want to applaud the filmmakers for realizing that the reason everybody liked Boba Fett was because his armor was super cool and his like his attitude in which he actually had a little lip and kind of talked back to Darth Vader and kind of went by
bounty
hunters go by their own rules so that but he was also kind of a buffoon, especially in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And so what I've realized is
here's another little bit of fan service. This guy that buys the speeder from
I love
Luke.
yeah Yeah, I love that voice. So some people love the Jawas or the Sand People. I love this guy.
What are we supposed to take from this, right? Because this is obviously not Tatooine. They're on this, you know, it doesn't snow like this on Tatooine as far as we know.
No, no, but so, our two units that work inside land speeders are pretty prevalent.
No, 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 but this guy, I'm talking about particularly about this guy that is selling land speeders who bought Luke's land speeder.
Oh, I assume that this is a, you know,
like they're just a race of people that are interested in land speeders like that, wherever they are in the galaxy, they're the land speeder race. Like that's the kind of thing to me that feels just like,
yeah, no, I get it. I didn't think about it that tight. I didn't think about it that close, but yeah,
I almost would have liked it better if Luke's speeder had showed up here. In fact, I was thinking
that's Brian Posehn, by the way, yeah. Famous comedian, and he is
like,
hilarious.
If that had literally been the guy that Luke sold his land speeder to, in a way that almost would have made better fan service for me.
Is it? Maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, my point is if we had confirmed that, like if the speeder that pulled up second was Luke's speeder.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah. So
what I was just going to say is Boba Fett, the character in and of itself, especially as he's linked to the prequels, is just not that interesting of a character. But his outfit and the demeanor of this code that the Mandalorians seem to have is interesting. So they pulled the most interesting parts of Boba Fett out and built a new character.
Well, yes, a new character. It's the same character. He's got a different name and slightly different armor.
Well, fair enough. Insofar that is true. What we know about Boba Fett is, even though he is a fan favorite, it is very limited.
Yeah.
We don't know much about him. But having seen the first two episodes, I'm at least liking what they're trying to. This is just laying down a typical cowboy thing. It's so simple, but this is a great little touch.
This is Posehn's best performance by far, I believe, as well. As short as it is.
Oh, I guess he's not coming back.
you might be a little bit ahead of me.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Spoiler. Posehn gets eaten. Now, would ice crack like that, Steven? Point of science?
Yeah, why wouldn't it?
Okay, just checking.
It doesn't seem like it's thick enough to hold the weight of the entire spaceship. Yeah,
it's actually a good point. I've noticed that, and I'm sure this was mentioned in the pre-production notes or in interviews or in, I'm sure it's mentioned now in reviews, but what I noticed is in this episode, it's very, very much a John Wayne type, Western type setup.
Yeah.
Western. And then in episode two, we come to realize that it's also a large portion of the famous Japanese series.
Spoiler alert. I haven't seen episode two yet. Maybe people listening haven't seen episode two yet.
Okay. I'm just saying Lone Wolf and Cub is a very well-known action series from Japan. That's all I'm saying.
So
it's a really nice shot. I love foreground into background stuff. I mean, when it's all in one shot, I hate cuts. I hate them. Not in comedies, but I'm trying to be wise. The longer you can hold a shot, in my opinion, the better. Yeah. I think cuts are the death of special effects, good performances, impressive moments. I think just lazy and sloppy cuts kill lots of things.
This guy feels a little too
shticky.
Yeah. Hey, I'm comic relief.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I guess they decided they needed somebody who was a foil for him, who's, you know, that strong silent type.
Right. I mean, and you and I, we're trying to write, you know, we're writing three different scripts right now. And it's like, how do we get interesting tidbits of necessary exposition out without it feeling like that? And it's like, okay, you know, he's in the middle of a pretty simple mission. You have a character not necessarily outright ask stuff, but invoke the lead character into giving up slight bits of information. And the key is how well and how entertainingly can you mask this exposition? And I think this episode does it pretty well, especially for a pilot episode of a brand new character.
My biggest problem with this whole episode is that it just feels so pilot-y. You know what I mean? Like it feels so like, okay, let's get this setup out of the way so that we can get to the real series. And that's true of a lot of pilots. It's the nature of TV in a lot of ways, but it really does sort of feel like. And it also feels to me like, You know, people often talk about, you know, oh, it could have lost 10 minutes or whatever. Like, to me, this episode could have been twice as long, and I would have liked it a lot more, I think.
There's a lot of stuff that they just shorthand,
you know? There's a lot of stuff where it feels like, okay, this is the scene where this happens, and you've seen this before, so we're just going to kind of, like, get to it. And like, again, this whole sequence is basically just, okay, well, we need to introduce that he's a bounty hunter, that he's badass. So we need,
and they're the kind of this, you know, they're kind of giving you the interior of the ship set up and the,
yeah,
you know, and this collection of bounties.
Yes. Connection of bounties and carbonite, which is, you know, again, a bit of fan service, but that kind of,
I think it's all, you know, it just meant like, you know, hey, if you and I got this gig and we'd call up the, whoever is it Pablo Hidalgo, the reigning expert of the Star Wars universe. And you would say, hey, if we're writing about the bounty hunter, would it not make sense for him to have like a whole, you know, a cargo hold full of like his quarry in carbonite? Would that be a common way? And they'd all get together and go, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah,
yes and no, because they establish in Empire Strikes Back,
yeah,
freezing Luke in carbonite is an extremely experimental thing that Lando suggests that has never been done before.
This is supposed to be after Return of the Jedi.
Right.
And it's Han that gets frozen, not Luke, you silly head.
Well, no, because the ultimate goal is to freeze Luke. Obviously, Han is the one who gets
good
frozen.
Point. You got me.
They test it on Han because they want to know if it's going to kill him first. Because Vader wants to make sure that Luke doesn't get killed.
I know. I've seen the film.
So my point is, you know, clearly the technology has progressed since then.
I love how just in the Star Wars universe, you know, Vulcan, Klingon, you know what they are. But in the Star Wars universe,
there's that guy.
Greedo. That's a Snaggletooth. You know what I mean?
That guy is the other guy that behind him, the lizard looking dude, is one of the people standing on the bridge.
That's A. Hammerhead. There is A. Carl Weathers, the awesome kick-ass actor from Rocky II, Action Jackson, a great run on Arrested Development, lots of other stuff. I kick right into, you know, professional commentary mode when somebody I like walks right onto the screen. You can't help it.
Yeah, I mean, presumably he's going to be a character in the series. He's not in this episode after this scene.
No, yeah, you know, and it's a kind of that fun, you know, if you're into a show, you wonder, all right, did they give that to Carl Weathers just to indicate that this character is important, or did they give it to Carl Weathers because he's going to be back later, one or the other, you know, but, it, you know, I hope he's back. Yeah. He's cool. And, you know, there are little tidbits here how Imperial credits are almost worthless now because the Empire has fallen, so, you know, it's just...
Right. And again, this is a callback to, I guess, that same stuff in Empire. Yeah, and there's the little Greedo-looking guy.
They're all over the place, you know, and they're called Rodians, all right? That's what I was getting to. That one I actually know. There are lots of breeds in a lot of races in Star Wars I don't know, but I do know that. I'll tell you, it's funny that we're watching a show called The Mandalorian because back in the day, way back in the day, we're talking like maybe late 80s, 90s, whatever, you would say that would be kind of one of those little trivial tidbits that you would throw out to Star Wars fans and be like, oh yeah, Boba Fett, he's got Mandalorian armor. Now, I'm sure other hardcore fans did, but I didn't know what that meant, but I just figured knowing the name of his armor, that would, you know, that was a little cachet that you'd have. I don't remember, probably on the back of the Topps trading card. And yeah, it's also weird to look at the Mandalorian armor without that little, Boba Fett has an antenna on his right hand side of his helmet, and that always it distracts me that he doesn't have an antenna yet. So, how are you feeling, by the way, everybody? Steven was out of commission for about a week with mild but very irritating pneumonia. How are you feeling now?
I'm mostly better.
Good.
My lungs aren't.
Oh, you want to talk about races that you may like or dislike? Jawas. If you have an opinion about Jawas, you're going to like this episode.
Yeah.
I love how that even though this features them quite prominently, we still never see under the freaking hood.
The Mandalorian?
No, the Jawas.
Yeah. I hope we don't ever. There's just two LED lights.
This is another callback. This is the exact same sensor from Jabba's palace in Return of. Oh, I'm sorry. I was you for a minute there. Yeah, I can do it too.
You don't need, well, see, but that's the thing, right? Is like what, the callbacks, and there's the little trash can from Jabba's palace. Like, is he on Tatooine now? Was that
that's
the
power
actual
droid,
cantina?
Actually, from Star Wars itself. That's a power droid. That's what that is.
Well, my point is, well, like, right. So, like, when they come one right after another, like, literally every 30 seconds.
Right, but Steven, here's the thing, man.
Just a little bit like, okay.
That front door sensor, it's like, that. Maybe that's what their doorbells are like. If you were watching
that,
a movie about Philadelphia, you'd be like, why does everybody have the same doorbell? Why does everyone's mailbox look alike?
They don't, is the point.
Werner Herzog, ladies
and
gentlemen.
We've seen two door sensor guys in the entire Star Wars universe, and they're both exactly the same. That's my point.
Steven, aside from the brilliant, mostly documentary films that you've seen from Werner Herzog, aside from those, what do you love about him?
His voice. Randy, his voice. We were watching this yesterday, and Randy's like, where do I know that guy's voice? And I was like, that's Werner Herzog.
And most recent film of his I've seen is Cave of Forgotten Dreams, which is a beautiful documentary.
Most recent one you've seen of his?
The one I've watched most recently. Seen others more recently. I saw that
in 3D in the theater, which was kind of cool.
Fantastic Fest. You're South by, right?
I don't know. I saw it, you know, when it was on.
Nice to see old school stormtroopers. And look, I like that they're beat up and dirty. Yep. That's cool, you know?
But just that a good Cave of Forgotten Dreams, hold on. Cave of Forgotten Dreams is one of the reasons why Found Footage 3D exists.
But Steven, what is Found Footage 3D?
It's a really bad found footage movie that tries to make fun of found footage movies, but instead just ends up doing all the same things wrong, at least according to some internet comments.
Oh, what a, you know what, that's the director talking. I'm the producer, and when I hear it, I think we got a lot more positive comments than that crap, so.
So
this is Gold Press Latinum,
again,
right?
What's that?
Gold Press Latinum. I was just making a Star Trek joke.
He goes to a second guy to get the job.
No, this...
which, again...
The thing here is that this currency is so rare and so valuable that, like...
I understand
you can
that.
Exchange
I'm talking,
that
I'm
for,
talking
like, an upgrade, like, in a video game. What?
Purely structurally.
Yeah.
The second half, all of the battle scenes, all of the stuff... There's so much stuff in this episode that feels rushed to me, and yet there's two different scenes in a row of him going to somebody to get this one job.
But Steven, that's a big part of being a bounty hunter is through go-betweens and third parties and tertiary characters that you need to know for later. So shut up.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
How do these tracking fobs work? Do the people have...
What do you mean? It tracks his quarry, right?
Yeah, but I understand that. But how does the quarry have a chip embedded in them? Is it read the quarry's bio signs and is able to distinguish those from other people?
Why does it matter? Like, why is there artificial gravity in
because
space?
Because we're writing a podcast called Science versus Fiction, so we're talking about the science.
Oh, I didn't know it was a point of science. You didn't say it.
How does the science of that work? They never explain. They never talk about it.
And clearly, why does nobody in Star Wars have a dog or something dog-like?
I think... Doesn't somebody in Solo have one?
I mean, is Salacious Crumb the most popular pet in Star Wars? That's not right.
Oh, you mean Salacious Crumb, the food animal? That we see being roasted?
I saw one back before
this.
Oh, there's one.
Or is it before this scene? Yeah, there we go. Yep,
there it is. There they are. Oh, God, is that... See, now that's a callback that makes you chuckle.
Yeah.
I love those, the R2-D2s that aren't rounded on the top. When I was a kid, that action figure was the R5-D4, and it was based on, in the original Star Wars, the droid that breaks at the Sandcrawler.
Right.
And you know, so that guy, you know, in, like, the second wave of the original Star Wars action figures, you'd get, like...
Oh, yeah, I had one of those.
Yeah, you know, Power Droid, R5-D4, what was the silvery, the one who looked like kind of an... He looked like an evil C-3PO, but with kind of a duck-like face.
But hold on a second. Go back to Salacious Crumb for a second. Because in Jedi, it's implied, if not outright shown, that he's an intelligent creature He doesn't ever really sort of speak per se, but he's clearly like aware of what's going on. He's not like a dog. He's more intelligent than a. He seems like an actual intelligent.
No,
being.
He seems. You know what he seems like?
Like a person.
A small monkey.
Not even. It feels like it's even more. Like it feels. You know.
All he does is laugh. That's it. That could be a reflex.
Right? I don't know.
Oh, so what your point is, it's kind of gross that they're eating halfway intelligent creatures?
Yes, exactly. That's my point.
All right, fair enough. But he's so freaking, they're so rotten. So
I always assumed he was sentient. I always assumed that he was like literally like a conscious, intelligent being.
Matt, now your issue with like with this scene is that it feels redundant from the or one before? Because this that feels like his this is his current mission, but this sequence feels like this is his order on the whole.
I'm talking about he goes to Carl Weathers and then he goes to
I misunderstood.
I don't think you need both of those scenes.
Yeah, well you're exchanging goods with a third person.
So here, let's talk point of science here. When obviously we don't know what this Beskar stuff is, but the swirly patterns obviously are meant to evoke something like Damascus steel, which is a very particular kind of steel that we have kind of lost the art of how to make. We don't know how to make it anymore, but
I'm just not telling anybody. I know how to make
it. It has to do with like folding steel and, you know, steel is an alloy of iron and carbon and it depends on the ratio of iron to carbon.
Oh, here we go.
Depend on the properties it has, blah, 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 blah. I say all this to say clearly that's, you know, a thing that has been forged. Right? It's a little thing. And so you expect her to take it out and start hammering it into something. But instead, she melts it down, which destroys all of that crystalline structure that was clearly carefully built up into it. And now it's just goop. And now she's casting it. So it's the same thing with the opening of Conan, where they cast the sword. Casting a sword is like the dumbest thing you could possibly do from a metallurgical point of view. It would just shatter the first time you tried to use it. So I don't know what they're making from this thing, but I guess it's science fiction metal.
It's also that visual, you know, they're trying to evoke, you know, blacksmiths and whatnot and in a high-tech world. So, you know, that's kind of what we're trying to evoke in like a medieval sense in a sci-fi world. And so I dig it.
And this, okay, so talk about shoehorning in exposition.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this is a character. I mean, all right, well, we'll talk about the actor in a second, but this is a character, like, aside from a few different inflections in his voice, and he doesn't really do much, like, morality choices in this movie, so we don't get much about the characters, so we need
but we have an entire series to learn that, like, that's the whole point. We do. I mean, obviously, the climax of the thing is his big morality choice, but so I don't know. Star that Wars, just feels just like, so okay, pretty. We're going to give a hint about that that he has a tragic backstory. Yeah,
I kind of like this kind of, doesn't it like speak to a little bit of a video game aspect of if he gets this super valuable metal, he got a shoulder guard. And if he gets more of it, he could build up the suit more. And it's like a video game where, you're over the time you can, and like a lot of people would knock that. But I'm like, if it works in the context of the story, I think it's fun, you know?
Is this a real place, do you think?
No.
Like it's
right here. What we're looking at right here?
Location, yeah, like shot on at a location.
Oh, no, I'm bad at this game, man. I'm bad at this game. You could show me a movie. I'm bad at this game.
Permissions to me, so.
I can tell, like, but I'm also very, not only am I bad at telling real versus digital, but on the other hand, I'm also very forgiving of slightly obvious digital effects.
The other thing is this now becomes a little bit repetitive of the opening scene, right? So, like, I almost feel like you don't need to show him looking for that bounty. You know, you would get the fact that he's a bounty hunter from those scenes with Carl Weathers and Werner Herzog.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, again, it just feels like that.
We're focusing on the storytelling structure, but I think a reason that you do that part first is you show him in a no-nonsense taking a potentially likable bounty and just shutting him up and freezing him down and trading him in and like just kind of showing the daily routine, which is not necessarily.
No, I know it's
sword
before,
fights and
right?
gun fights and brawls or something like this.
It's very standard screenplay structure where you're like, okay, well, we have to show what he looks like before life changes.
Well, I mean, Jon Favreau is a very good writer, but that's what he writes. He writes standard Hollywood structure. And he's damn good at it too, if you ask me. I love these creatures. I love the kind of two-leg design. I think
I honestly
cool.
can't tell like how much of this is CG, how much of it is practical.
What, you think these are real monsters?
Well, I don't think they're actual monsters that exist in the real world, no, but clearly there are practical elements to this sequence. But maybe not. I don't know. Now Favreau can do whatever the heck.
Yep. Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah, the practical elements of this are the voices of Nick Nolte and Pedro Pascal. Those are the two. Those are definitely practical. The rest,
yeah, but they're designed in a way that makes them feel like they could be done practically, you know, which makes them, which is a good thing because it makes them feel like they fit in the world of the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know,
this dude
is another bit of fan service because he's the Ugnaught or whatever it is that are in Cloud City that shoot.
Is he though? Because they're all kind of feral, and this guy's pretty.
They're not feral. They run the like.
I don't know. Do Ugnaught speak in Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back? Rather, sorry, world. They don't speak.
I mean, they're not. I don't think they're feral at all. They're like run the behind the scenes at.
All right, but their point is they don't sit and talk to people like this guy does. Anyway, I love this character, and I will say I've seen episode 2, and he remains cool. And I want to talk about real quick just because his voice is pretty damn cool, and I'm sure we'll see him soon. And eventually, they're going to show his face. They have to. But Pedro Pascal, Adjustment Bureau. I'm sure you saw that, Stephen.
Huh. Well, so yeah, I wonder because you know. This is obviously a Disney show. Disney also runs Marvel. And Marvel movies are notorious for superheroes taking their masks off like literally every 12 seconds because they're terrified that if they don't show the movie star as often as possible, people will forget that it's, you know, Robert Downey Jr. So it is an interesting and I think a good choice that they...
Well, I mean, if they're never going to show him, they at least cast an actor with a cool voice.
Like, again, this feels like it could be almost an entire episode, right? This whole, their relationship with each other, him having to tame the horse, like, that feels like the kind of thing that, like...
So you think there's too much stuff in this pilot?
Yeah, I feel like if this had been an hour and a half long pilot, and they'd been able to take some time developing this relationship a little bit, like... You know, it feels
better though.
Sort of episodic,
I think I agree with you, and I also say, on the other hand, I'd rather it feel a bit over rushed or overstuffed or a little rushed than to feel dry and boring.
I think you can do. I don't think those are your only choices.
Right, but they're kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum in a way, and you know, this has a lot of fun stuff in it. It's, you know, you got to introduce the character, a handful of recurring characters, you know.
But this whole sequence in particular just feels, because it is almost sort of boring because it's like, okay, well, it feels like it's just hitting the beats.
It's the exact scene you've seen in 100 Westerns.
Exactly.
Where the cowboy has to win over
the
horse.
This is exactly.
The bucking bronco. And it's like a fun homage to that whole theme.
But it feels perfunctory for that reason, right? It feels like, okay, we're not going to actually do anything with this that separates it from that. We're just going to sort of reference that thing, and that's enough, you know?
And
we're
going to
rush through
it
because, you know.
It is such a trope. The training, the what's it called when you take the horse and make
montage.
Him your friend? You
know, whatever,
not just that,
breaking the horse,
breaking the Bronco, yes. And you know, and then what's funny is they don't do anything; they just kind of rattle across one landscape with a very rocky like.
Well, and it's never in doubt. They do. That's the thing. I guess the thing that bugs me about that scene is that they sort of do the false defeat, and it's like, oh, he decides, yeah, I'm just going to give up, and the guy, and then the wise old man says, no, you should try it one more time, and then he tries it one more time, and he succeeds, and it's like. Yeah,
it's a bit on the nose. It is. It's very much Campbell-y, Star Wars-y.
There's no tension in it because it's very obvious what's about to happen. So it feels, it feels perfunctory to me.
There is some stuff in this that is very not perfunctory, but
well,
a
and
little
he is an interesting
standard.
Enough character,
standard
that
is
guy.
The word I would use.
The Ugnaught guy is interesting enough character that like I wanted to spend more time with him.
I wanted to spend more time with Brian Posehn's taxi driver.
Well, he's not coming back. We know that much.
Okay.
Got eaten by a space walrus.
Pedro Pascal also in The Great Wall, which I saw. He was in the second Kingsman movie. He was in Equalizer 2 and If Beale Street Could Talk, and he will soon be in the second Wonder Woman film. And yeah, I mean, there are so, it's so, I don't even want to say on the nose, but
yeah,
it's,
and that's
so
like the
much
town.
A 1950s Western. Oh, it's yeah. So much is, that.
This is the, and now he's going to go fight the Mexicans. Those yep. are the Mexicans. Like, which is ironic because Pascal is,
I'm not sure.
He's not Mexican. If he has, I think he's South American.
He may be. I'm just not quite as racist as you are, so. Now, yeah, this kind of
actually be Spanish.
This draw. Oh, yeah, it's a good point. This
no, he's
draws
Chilean.
In.
He's Chilean.
This draws into the thing that I another thing I love about. I mentioned it before that I don't know if this is the IG-88 that was in Empire.
No, it's not. It's IG-11.
Oh, thank you.
It but says it in the subtitles.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yep. Okay. But it is the exact same design. And, you know, as a yeah. kid, this movie you've seen 4, 5, 6 times, yeah. and you see a handful of bounty hunters standing on the deck there, and you're like, yeah. that one looks pretty cool. What does he do? And you had the action yeah. figure, and he would, you know, stand up, you'd put him next yeah. to Bossk and Boba Fett, and, you know, he was pretty cool. But I give these filmmakers real credit for finding
some fun.
It's
a good thing he got
that
shoulder pad. I didn't catch that the first time.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I like this. Yeah, I like what they did with this droid here. I like the way he moves and the way he shoots and the way
oh,
he
it's so cool. They do it twice. Inhuman, they give him a big yeah. moment in a bit, and then they're like, you know what? Let's do it again.
But again, this feels like it could be an entire episode, this whole scene. Like, it feels like this could be like 3 episodes, and they just
– Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, to you, what you're noticing about that is another person's, damn, this has a – this just doesn't stop. It's got like 3 or 4 mini-movies in it, you know? Like – that what you're noticing as a detriment, other people, i.e. me, would mostly see as a good thing. Yeah, I don't need
never,
a whole episode of him breaking that
like,
monster.
Yeah, I wanted a whole episode with that droid.
This is 10 or 8. 8 or 10. I'm not sure.
8 or 10 what?
Episodes.
Oh, I don't know. Have they said
let me,
it?
Hold on. I was checking Pedro Pascal, his page. Eight.
Just even the production eight. Design is obviously like,
but it's of Star Wars. That's like saying Star Trek looks like Star Trek. It's
no.
Of
I'm
Star
talking
Wars.
About. I'm talking about it feeling like a Western siege movie, like a Mexican villa.
Yeah,
that they're
here's something you won't see in a Mexican villa. That this robot. I love.
It's like the Three Amigos. It's the Two Amigos.
That must have been fun to animate. I mean, difficult, but fun.
Well, so, you know, from point of science, a robot wouldn't ever miss.
He right? didn't.
Well, maybe he did or he didn't. But
I don't think he missed anyone. He
Star
could
Wars,
miss if someone happened
Star
to get
Wars
out of the way.
Canon, in Star Wars canon, particularly prequels, there are plenty of robots that are lousy shots, whereas a robot... by definition, almost would be a perfect shot every time.
Yep. Yo, I hear you. I do also, there's a callback there, a little thermal detonator from Return of the Jedi. He has one in his chest, which is just the Star Wars answer to hand
they
grenade.
Repeat that beat of like, think one, maybe one too many times.
Whole, you know what, though? It's,
thing.
What? Why? That he wants to self detonate?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. And I think the reason that they lean on it, they lean on it twice, is because what happens later.
I think they do it 3 times.
I think it's because of what happens later, then you don't feel quite as terrible because the character, the robot, was willing to self-destruct.
See, now they do it a second time.
Multiple times, right? But no, it's the rule of threes. I think it's funny.
I just don't feel like this scene progresses.
I don't know, man. I think. Oh, it's an action beat. I love it. I think that maybe.
But it's the same action beat, right?
I don't think this franchise is like perfect or above reproach. I certainly don't. But I think I'm just in the kind of, what do they say, in the tank or in the can or in the. I'm just easy on Star Wars, man. I'm just an easy lay on Star Wars.
I generally am on the movies. I get it. Again, it may sound like I dislike this. I don't dislike this. I'm intrigued about what the rest of the sequence is. I just feel like again, it feels like structurally, it feels like the beats of this scene are like, oh, they're just repetitive. It's like, okay, we get pinned down. Oh, then we shoot our way out. Nope, now we're pinned down again. I'm going to threaten to kill myself. All right, now we're going to shoot our way out again. And it's just, it doesn't progress in a way that feels interesting or satisfying to me.
No, I thought it did. They were getting pinned down. The guy with the big tank cannon comes in. They come up with a plan and they get out of it. I think that not just you, me as well.
And again, the idea that these guys are kind of immediately become friends is one of those things that you just have to kind of go along with.
But they don't.
They're way too trusting of each other right now, given that they're both going after the same mark.
It speaks to this character's intelligence is that if he speaks to this robot and offers him a fair deal, not only will the robot go for it, but a robot, by your own definition, won't decide to betray you.
Yeah, but again, if you want to establish him as this sort of lone bounty hunter guy or whatever, like...
He's using this robot as a tool, I think. I think it's kind of clever.
Yeah, I mean, you can...
I don't think what happens was his plan from the beginning, what he does at the end, but he was more than willing to do it.
It just feels very rushed and forced to me. I think there's a version of this where I would buy this completely. But
you just wanted this robot to be around for three more episodes. And the reason I say is because I did too. I also did.
Yeah.
Now, did you see this coming, that it's a baby?
The minute that I saw the cradle there, I knew exactly what kind of baby it was.
No, when he had to go pick up his package, you know?
No, because they say he's 50 years old, but then I was like, okay, well, clearly.
Yeah, but Yodas live a long time.
So I will tell you this, unequivocally. If this turns out to actually be related to Yoda in some way, other than just he happens to be the same species, I'm canceling my subscription to Disney Plus.
Are you really? How are you going to do that?
Well, I'm canceling your subscription to Disney Plus that I'm currently watching it on.
That to me is not only it's a great shot there. Not only is it one of the cutest things I've ever seen.
Okay, so sorry, but that's a contradiction, because he says, "Oh, the guy says to kill him," but when he got the job was bringing it in alive, and then he says, "Well, can we kill it?" And the guy was like, "Well, I guess you can kill it if you have to." And then
the robot got a slightly different.
But they told the robot he's supposed to kill it.
Yep. See now, but here's my question: why would that bother you if that's like Yoda's like
again,
nephew?
It's just like there's a problem in a lot of, for the same reason that it would bother me if Rey turned out to be like Skywalker's Ben Kenobi. Everybody was like, oh, Rey is going to be Ben Kenobi's daughter or whatever, and I'm just like, because it implies that this giant universe that has literally an unending different kinds of species in it, everybody important in the universe is related to one another. And that just, you know, like, clearly there's a planet somewhere where there are a ton of Yodas, right? It would be like if you met two people in China, you know, you took a trip to China and you met two people and on opposite ends of the Chinese mainland and they happen to be brothers. You're just like,
kind of a rare species. That's all, right? That's
how rare could they possibly be?
Maybe it's the kind of species where the women can only have one child. There you go. Like, that would make them kind of scarce. We don't see a lot of Yodas in Star Wars.
That's what happens in China. China still has a billion people in it. So, like, I don't know.
My take is that this is, a lot of it is on the nose, but it's really well put together. It looks nice. It sounds nice. The cast is good. It has some action beats. It has some humor.
It feels like an appetizer for something better. Is what I'm saying. Like, it feels like, okay, let's just get through this stuff so now we can start to it started auto-playing the next episode for me.
I don't think it reinvents anything, but nor did I watch it and go, oh God, is this the future of Star Wars? I think it's promising. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
And I mean, eight episodes this season, and then it was already renewed to do another one. So
I don't know how many TV pilots I've ever seen that were good in and of themselves. Maybe Breaking Bad. This might be it. And even that has some very piloty kind of structure to it.
Right.
It's a tough nut to crack.
Because on a show like this, almost your first episode is virtually, you know, the first half of Act One. And in a book or in a normal movie, the first half of Act One is relatively quick.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I get what you're saying. It seems like a long setup, but a lot of stuff wedged in. I had a good time with it, and I think Episode Two is a lot of fun as well. And we'll be back soon with another bonus episode and regular episode, of course, of Science versus Fiction. If you're listening to this, it's because you're a patron. Thank you very much, and we hope you're enjoying this series.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.